Thank you, sir. Good morning, everyone. I would like to call to order today's meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education. Today, we will be having an informational hearing on the staffing needs for the Office of Child Care through the Early Learning Division. So, unless there's any other business to preempt that, I'd like to call forward, if they'd all like to come together or separate, whatever works for you guys. Miriam Calderon, the Early Learning System Director, Dawn Woods, the Child Care Director, and Reginald Richardson, the Deputy Director of DHS. And our trusty analyst, Lisa.
Good morning, Co-Chair Smith Warner and Monroe, and members of the Joint Committee of Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education. For the record, my name is Miriam Calderon, Early Learning System Director for the State of Oregon.
Hi, and for the record, my name is Dawn Woods, and I'm the Child Care Director for the Early Learning Division.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Dr. Reginald Richardson, I'm the Deputy Director for the Department of Human Services.
Wonderful. So we are here today to discuss the agency and Governor Brown's budget request for the Early Learning Division. We are seeking new general fund investments that will address safety of children and licensed child care. Our request includes 14 new positions for the licensing program in the Office of Child Care, totaling $1.7 million. Five of these positions are limited duration. They will support a pilot of tandem investigations with the Department of Human Services, looking at allegations of abuse and neglect in child care facilities. And the other nine permanent positions will support greater management oversight and caseload reductions for licensing staff. The second part of our request covers the cost of lead testing of water sources for regulated subsidy providers. These are providers in our state who care for our children in subsidy in their homes. We have estimated this cost to be at $239,796 for the remainder of the biennium. This cost includes purchasing test kits for all of these providers, and about $10,000 of this amount will go toward supporting an external partner to coordinate the purchase of the test kits for all of the providers. I want to talk a little bit about why this is an urgent need at this moment. Our licensing program has been undergoing a significant amount of transformation and change in the last couple of years.
Mr. Kocha?
Yeah. Question always sure. comes up. Testing for lead is wonderful. It's mm-hmm. important. It's critical. But when we find out where the lead is, what do we do about it? And is there a request for funding to alleviate the problem when we discover it? That's always the big question. I mean, knowing that it's there and knowing that we all know that it's very harmful potentially, but we need to do something about it when we find it.
Absolutely. I will speak in a little bit more detail about the regulation and the rule, but I can tell you right now the request is only to cover the cost of the lead test. We are in the rule that the Early Learning Council is working on, looking at requiring providers to look at corrective action and working with the Oregon Health Authority. So we know there are a range of options for mitigation, and we know that a lot of that, what would actually work to mitigate, will largely depend on the results of the results of the lead test itself. So I think at this stage what we're recommending is that we move forward with requiring tests, working with providers and the Oregon Health Authority to look at corrective action plans and be able to analyze the data that we get back on the extent of the problem to be able to come back and really estimate what will the cost be to support mitigation.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks. So going forward and talking about our licensing program and the changes, about a year and a half ago, about a year and a half after the program transitioned from the Department of Employment to the newly created Early Learning Division, leadership at the time requested an internal audit, and we looked at we were seeking recommendations to be able to support and strengthen the licensing program. After the audit, new leadership was instituted in licensing and in the Office of Child Care, and we began work to implement recommendations from this audit. We've also, the licensing is also working to implement in the team expansive new federal rules. So we're looking at strengthening background check requirements, which we've started to implement as well in the last year and a half. We've taken on monitoring and conducting annual health and safety assessments in approximately 27 new providers that were previously license exempt, who remain licensing exempt, but for whom we had not done any monitoring. So this has caused increases in caseloads, and we've added an annual visit to our registered family providers. So between work to implement and strengthen, meet the recommendations from the audit, meet new federal rules, we've seen a significant change in the way the licensing program works and operates, and have seen an increase in workload for the team there. There's also been, since I've been in this position, approximately 7 months, we've seen tragedies in licensed child care and illegal care, and that has really asked us to look at all of our practices through the lens of, if we can do something to prevent a tragedy like this from ever occurring in the future, we need to be able to do that. And so we've looked at a number and implemented a number of changes to our current policies and practices. For example, now we require mandatory unannounced visits within 3 days after any report of an injury of a child in a facility that requires professional medical attention. We are out there within 3 days of any, on another unannounced visit, when we receive any complaint about any complaint in licensed child care. We are following up and doing more regular reviews of supervisors of complaints and decisions that licensing staff take, following up actions. We've also looked at our practices around illegal care when we get complaints about illegal care. So again, we are out there within 3 days, and we've sort of, we've looked at all of the procedures sort of from A to Z, from when that complaint comes in to how often we're following up, and what actions that we're taking. As you know, we also have there is also legislation that will give us more tools to follow up on illegal care, but in the interim, we have trained staff and adjusted our practices on that. So with, new monitoring requirements and new federal rules and working to really strengthen our practices, we are really feeling like it is the way to ensure successful execution of this is to make an impact on the caseloads, which are currently 1 to 150 as we've taken on these new providers.
Senator Thompson?
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Could you give us a few examples of those, what did you say, new federal rules or federal monitoring requirements? Could you give some examples?
Sure, absolutely. So we, Senator, Chair Smith-Warner, Chair Monroe, Senator Thompson, we are now required to do FBI checks as part of our background check process for individuals working in licensed care. So that's a new federal requirement. So it's a much more expansive background check than we previously did. We are now doing annual health and safety visits to approximately 2,700 additional providers each year, and that is also a new federal requirement. These are license-exempt providers, so they don't hold a license, but we are working with them to look at their health and safety practices, give them feedback, try to offer them supports. And we are also doing another annual visit to registered family providers. So previously, we were only visiting those homes unless once every 2 years to renew their license, and now we're in there every year. Yeah. Don, anything?
Okay. Representative Wisnett? Sorry. Did you want to add to that?
Yeah. No, I think she covered it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Everyone up here at this table and everyone, I think, in Oregon agrees that the lead poisoning is a significant thing that needs to be addressed. But once you check a facility to be sure their water is okay, it's okay. It doesn't get bad later, does it?
Chair Smith-Warner, Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett. What the recommendation is that you actually test every 6 years. That comes from the Oregon Health Authority. And so it has to do, and I'm not technical in this matter necessarily, but what they tell us is that there could be some leaching from the actual water pipelines, and that's why they recommend testing every 6 years.
Follow up.
Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, 6 years, so that's not a lot of workload. How many units, facilities are we inspecting?
In total, it would be about 7,000.
I'm just looking, trying to look for ways and means. I'm looking at the money and the number of people. When you do the lead inspection, are you doing other inspections at the same time, safety inspections of the facility?
Yes, the lead testing, though, is more on the child care provider to do the testing, send it into a lab, and then they send back the results to us, in which we will document and post those for families.
Okay, I'll have more. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, great. So I also want to give an overview of the Early Learning Division. And then I'll have Dawn talk a little bit more specifically about the Office of Child Care. But the Early Learning Division is responsible for multiple programs and grants designed to provide a system of supports for young children and families from birth to kindergarten. So we have programs that support children in low-income families participate in preschool and Head Start. We support families in accessing home visiting services and other family supports. And we have numerous programs aimed at building a supply of quality child care, including through supports and professional development for early learning providers. And then finally, the division has responsibility for regulating child care in our state. And as a part of that, we look at a range of issues related to health and safety and the skills and backgrounds of the providers working in child care. So I'll ask Dawn to talk a little bit more with more detail about what the Office of Child Care does.
Good morning, Chair Smith Warner, Chair Monroe, members of the committee. I kind of want to provide an overview of what the Office of Child Care does. And we sit within the Early Learning Division and are really responsible for the licensing of both child care centers as well as family-based programs. We have 8 field offices throughout the state and these staff are responsible for doing the on-site inspections, assessing complaints and providing technical assistance and resources to child care providers. We license approximately 4,200 child care facilities, and in November of 2016 began monitoring the license exempt providers receiving ERDC subsidy, or as we're calling them, the regulated subsidy providers, which is one of those new federal requirements. In addition to the field work, the Office of Child Care conducts background checks on all individuals working in a licensed child care facility and any individuals who live in a home-based child care home and may be associated with that facility. So essentially looking any individual who may have unsupervised access with a child, so a regular visitor, any members of the home that are over the age of 18.
And can I confirm, and all of those people have to get FBI background checks?
Chair Smith Warner, Chair Monroe, you are correct. Every individual, which is has been a significant lift in implementing that new federal requirement. We're also required we check the National Sex Offender Registry as well as other state databases around child abuse and neglect.
Thank you.
And so the Office of Child Care is also the administrator for the federal Child Care Development Fund block grant, and 70% of those funds are required to go to the ERDC subsidy program, and the remaining funds are used to support the licensing system, provide the quality improvement and professional development of child care providers. You can see on this next slide, and this doesn't have the ERDC dollars, so this is how much, how $42 million go to fund our licensing system of the federal dollars, as well as the professional development needs and those quality improvement supports, with about 10% of those funds coming from general fund.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on that chart, how much is the fees paying for your budget?
Chair Smith Warner, Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett. I don't have those numbers right here with me, but I can definitely follow up with you on that. Our fees are fairly small in terms of what the licensing fees are and any civil penalties, which I'll actually speak about a little bit later.
Thank you.
So in 2016, we really began taking aggressive actions to strengthen our licensing system. Director Calderon referenced, the early learning system director requested an internal audit, and me coming into this role, it really essentially became my playbook to really look at what were the improvements that needed to be made to really strengthen our licensing system to ensure the health and safety of young children. In 2016, we also launched a project to replace our very antiquated database and create a web portal for providers and families to really provide access to information, particularly for families looking for care and to understand what the compliance history of that child care program was. In 2017, we enhanced our background checks, which we've referenced about as far as those new federal regulations, which was a significant increase. In the past, prior to this House Bill 2259 in the 17th session, is which gave us that authority. Prior to that, we only did an FBI check if someone had lived outside of the state in the last 18 months or something else within an Oregon check kind of identified that we needed to look elsewhere. We've increased unannounced visits in the small family child care by one additional visits and formed a statutory work group that was chaired by Representative Lively and Representative Peluso to really determine any additional enforcement actions that we might need in order to keep children safe. And this is seen in a current House Bill 4065, which I'll actually go into a little more detail in a few minutes. We've also began drafting new rules to strengthen our child care licensing regulations and really looking at strengthening, clarifying, and aligning across the different settings. And those new rules also address the lead testing and what mitigation strategies would be needed. In 2017 session, we also put forward the House Bill 2260, which gives us the authority to provide the comprehensive information on the new website portal for families and really increasing the transparency of our inspections and findings in child care facilities.
Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, when you're testing lead, I know it's in the water sometimes, lead pipes and so on. But a lot of these daycares are in older buildings that also have lead paint. Mm-hmm. Do you also test for lead paint?
Chair Smith-Warner, Chair Monroe, yes. And we actually, our rules have been fairly strong in that arena. So we've looked at what that needs to be to strengthen, but we definitely look at that both in lead paint as well as construction dust.
Thank you.
And so the impact of really looking at all these changes has resulted in increased enforcement actions. So from 2016 to 2017, we have doubled our enforcement actions. And I think it's important to note that it's always a challenge to ensure that there's a supply of child care for families, but we also must make child safety our priority. And so in taking a child safety first approach and increasing visits and having stricter background requirements, we are seeing an increase in those actions.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The 88 enforcement actions, can you break those down, not, you know, exact numbers, but how many are small facilities and how many are larger?
Chair Smith-Warner, Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett. I would say that it is probably almost about 50-50, but that's from my memory. I can definitely follow up with that and get a closer adjustment, better numbers for you on that. But I would say it's probably about 50-50. It could be a little bit heavier on the small family childcare simply because there's more of them.
Yeah. And that was my next question, Madam Chair, follow-up is, how many of, or related follow-up, how many of those enforcement actions came from unannounced versus regular schedule? If you can give us that data, maybe. You know,
Chair Smith-Warner, Senator Monroe, Representative Wisnett, I'm going to have to follow up on that. I would say that the majority would most likely come from complaints, and but that's just kind of from just kind of looking at cases.
So to confirm, Madam Chair, so the number of small, large, and did they come from unannounced or complaints or just, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And I'm assuming that an enforcement action doesn't mean a shutdown.
Chair Smith Warner, Senator Monroe, you are correct. That doesn't mean a shutdown. So we would need to have a very serious violation in order to close a facility, or kind of a pattern and a history of a concerning pattern of behavior. Thank you.
We have my data to be how many are closed down.
Sure. I was thinking the same thing, Representative.
And the other thing is, yeah, how do you define, or is there definitions in serious?
If you, whether there's a range or a, yeah. Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So in 2018, the Early Learning and Family Support Committee, chaired by Representative Lively, has identified the enforcement tools that we need to better protect children. This is seen, again, as I referenced, House Bill 4065, which really complements the many changes that we have made to date. The bill provides the Office of Child Care with continuing jurisdiction for when a license expires, that we can continue any legal action that we might be taking on that facility. The bill also clarifies providers who have had significant licensing violations in the past to be prohibited from providing care for at least 5 years. We would be able to issue cease and desist orders against individuals providing illegal care, and as well as create a maximum civil penalty in which we could cite. Our current civil penalties are at a maximum of $100, and House Bill 4065 would significantly increase that to be at a maximum $1,500 for a civil penalty. And we see this change as really a large deterrent from providing illegal care and other serious violations, as we know that child care providers are low wage earners, unfortunately, in our current climate. This bill also gives the Office of Child Care more explicit authority to impose conditions on a license if there's a safety concern with a child care facility. For instance, we may place a condition on a child care facility where supervision is an issue because of the shape of the play area, in which potentially not being able to see a child. And additionally, House Bill 4065 will support better information sharing between the Office of Child Care and DHS. So as Miriam shared earlier, our licensing program has been undergoing significant amount of change over the last couple of years. And given the tragedies, we are really at a stress point where additional resources are needed to ensure implementation of these new changes. So the Early Learning Division is requesting 6 additional licensing specialists. 3 compliance specialists, 3 positions, will provide training to staff by identifying areas of need through reviewing findings or enforcement actions, leading case reviews. These positions will also hold a small caseload. The 3 compliance specialist 2 positions will be used to address the high caseloads in identified offices and expand our capacity to increase unannounced visits. The staffing will also reduce the caseload from 150 to 138. As noted earlier, prior to the addition of regulated subsidy providers, we were at approximately 1 to 100. This conservative request gets us closer and is a beginning step to address the high caseloads. The staffing request also looks to increase the oversight of licensing staff of the other 3 positions is a licensing director to oversee the day-to-day operations of the licensing system. This individual will be accountable to ensure all the new changes are implemented in the field and in conjunction with our background and legal and compliance unit. This position will lead in the development of metrics and reports to continuously improve our licensing system and really increase the level of oversight to ensure there's consistency between our staff. The second position is to add a regional manager to our Medford office. The Medford office is geographically isolated and really needs an on-site manager to provide the support to staff to ensure that these changes are implemented. And this manager, once trained, will oversee another smaller field office. The final management position is to add a principal executive manager C to our background intake and customer service unit. The current manager oversees the existing our central office, oversees 38 staff herself, and so really needing to provide that additional support for implementing those changes. Uh, We feel it's important to call out why we believe these additional managers are critical to the reforms that are being made in our licensing system. Effectively implementing the significant changes will require focused and intentional oversight. Having a licensing system that is transparent and trusted requires a high level of quality assurance. Those actions, to make sure that those actions are appropriate and in line with our new policies and procedures. Managers need to regularly review licensors' actions, track the timeliness of their visits to childcare facilities, as well as ensure all follow-up occurs within the required time period. And if there are issues, they are responded to immediately, and any needed supports are provided to our staff. Consistent review of data and reports are also needs to identify patterns of violations so that the Office of Child Care can adjust as needed, whether there is a need for additional training for staff or additional monitoring of that program. Having a management team that is strong is essential to implementing these new procedures and processes to really strengthen both our staff, for our providers, and for our stakeholders. In order for the Office of Child Care to have a greater consistency, managers do need to review staff's documentations from inspection reports, complaint visits to determine if adequate documentation is needed to complete, which also helps us build our case and build our, if we need to go to hearing on a particular facility. Continually assessing the work of staff to identify areas where increased training and coaching will strengthen the child care licensing system and better protect children. I'd now like to pass it over to Director Calderon and Dr. Richardson to talk to you about the other staffing request around special investigators.
Thank you, Dawn. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Richardson here, who's joining me, who's been a really important partner at the Department of Human Services as we've looked at how we can enhance our practices around investigations of abuse and neglect in child care facilities. So this request includes five limited duration positions, and we are seeking to be able to pilot tandem investigations with the Department of Human Services. And we would focus this pilot in the OCC field offices in Portland, Salem, and Eugene, and the effect of these positions would be to allow OCC, Office of Child Care staff, to be able to join and conduct tandem investigations with CPS staff when we receive complaints or allegations of harm. So I'm going to ask Dr. Richardson to talk more in more detail about our current investigative authority and roles for the Department of Human Services, and I'll talk about early learning.
Thank you, Director. So the Department of Human Services has responsibility, both statutory responsibility, to conduct investigations involving allegations of abuse and neglect in child caring facilities. And when we do those investigations, we're trying to determine whether or not there's been abuse and neglect, and then to take the appropriate safety precautions to ensure that the child is safe in the facility. Most of our investigations, as you know, by far are in more familiar investigations in which we are looking at families as being the perpetrator. The Early Learning Division, on the other hand, has responsibility to do investigations around issues related to their regulatory responsibility, safety, licensing, and then take the appropriate action. What we are proposing would allow us to do this in a tandem way to ensure that children are safer and that allow us to move in quicker in order to ensure that safety.
Thank you. So our agencies today are collaborating on over 100 cases of suspected abuse or neglect in licensed child care facilities. And we at the Early Learning Division no longer believe that conducting separate investigations is the best approach. And we're seeking to learn more through this pilot about how we can bring our very complementary skill sets together across both agencies to be able to conduct more investigations that improve safety for children in licensed child care. For the Office of Child Care, in order for us to be able to take action, timely action, and actions on providers that are not following our rules with regard to health and safety, we are learning that we really need to be able to get more timely information and that we need to be able to have more firsthand knowledge and information. And so by being able to do tandem investigations with CPS USGS, we'll be able to gather the information that we need to fulfill our regulatory and statutory responsibilities, as well as be able to benefit from the experience and expertise that and the different lens and perspective that CPS will bring to this work.
At the Department of
Representative Wisdom.
Thank you. What step in the investigation, or is this coming from the pilot programs, do you bring in the Attorney General or State Police? Or?
Sure. Chair Monroe, Chair Smith-Warner, Representative Wisnet. Depending on the nature of the allegation, our partnering agencies, our Child Protective Services or law enforcement, are called in early on in investigations. And current practice right now is that the Office of Child Care is deferential to those lead agencies in these investigations. We would, using the evidence and the conclusions of their investigations, also work to build our case. And at times, those the conclusions or the actions that we take could be challenged through through the courts. So we would also work with the Department of Justice to go to administrative before an administrative law judge. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, follow up, man.
Yeah.
I've only been here 14, almost 15 years, but CPS, is that part of the Child Protective Services? Is that in
I'm sorry, yes, that's Child Protective Services.
And that, is that you or is that Attorney General?
That's Department.
Department of Chair, members of the committee, it's the Department of Human Services. And we do, once our Child Protective Services unit receive a allegation of abuse and neglect, we concurrently report to the police. We're required to do that on our investigations.
So follow up. So so the problem, the issue here is then OCC is going to be more trained, or Child Protective Services qualified now to know when you go to the step of needing legal advice or things like that.
Right, and so.
But you're not always with the OCC, so that's.
Not now.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
What trying
thank
to get
you.
Correct. To.
Thank you. Understand.
Yeah. If I would expand on that, we are we're deferential, so we're waiting for our partnering agencies to be able to complete their investigations, and they're sharing information with us. And what this pilot would allow us to do is be able to go out together, as Dr. Richardson explained. The Department of Human Services is really looking at their investigation is really focused on an individual child and the threat of harm and removing that child from the threat of harm. Whereas with the Office of Child Care and through this pilot, we'll be able to come in and look at really the threat of harm to any child cared for in that facility.
Thank you very much.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you. Just to remind all of us sitting up here, since we are all mandatory reporters, that's the group you mandatorily report to if you don't do the police, because they connect with each other. So I just want to make sure that we all know that's who you're talking to at Human Services when you have a report to make that as a mandatory reporter you have to make. So.
Thank you. Okay. So I'll conclude and talk a little bit more about the lead testing. So last October, the Early Learning Council voted to require lead testing of all water in all child care homes and centers and regulated subsidy facilities. Over the past several months, the council has collected public comment from over 90 respondents, and the Early Learning Division staff have been working closely with our colleagues at the Oregon Health Authority to finalize the proposed rules that govern lead testing and subsequent mitigation in order to ensure that our rules address the latest research and best practices in the health field. At our upcoming meeting on February 22nd, the Early Learning Council will vote on the adoption of final rules, and then we will work with the Oregon Health Authority, who will support the implementation of this work to ensure that all facilities complete their lead testing of water sources by September of this year. As I mentioned earlier, for any facilities with tests indicating levels of lead that are too high, the facilities will be required to submit a corrective action plan to address lead levels in water within their home or facility. This lead testing process comes at a cost to programs, licensed childcare facilities. Can accommodate these requests. However, for regulated subsidy providers, these are the programs that are exempt from licensing but serve children in our child care subsidy program. We are seeking to be able to reimburse the cost of lead testing for them. So we have, it is important to note that we have estimated this cost at using information about the cost of the test per fixture. And since the vast majority of these facilities are private homes, we are estimating two fixtures per home. And that is represented in this total estimate. We also have learned that for the Portland metro area, some of the testing costs will be covered by the Portland Water Bureau, and so we are not including costs for providers in the Portland metro area in this estimate of $237,000.
Senator Roblin.
So currently, if you get a report and you go to investigate a child care facility, do you call Human Services instantly? Because they're the ones that are supposed to investigate anyway, and as a mandatory reporter, which you guys are anyway, you should be doing that at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so this project is basically to firm that up so that there aren't any little gaps. As I look at it, that sure. Seems to be what's happening here.
Chair Smith-Warner, Chairman Rowe, Senator Roblin, we already do a tremendous amount of collaboration and information sharing and cross-reporting across both agencies. The difference would be through this pilot is that rather than wait to go out to investigate, we would have the kind of trained staff that would be able to go out alongside Department of Human Services. We have had already in the short time that I've been at the Division of Early Learning, a couple of experiences where we have gone out. The nature of the case has resulted in our staff going out alongside CPS workers, and we're already seeing, I think, some of the benefits of what we were able to determine. So we're really hopeful that this pilot will bring us a lot of important information that, again, will help us take the kinds of actions we need to against facilities where there are serious concerns of threat to children.
Follow up? No. Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I personally, and I'm sure one of my colleagues, honorable colleagues here at the IC, want protection of the children primary. I would caution your previous directors, I've made this point that this is a new mission for early learning to do this inspection. And I hope that the rules and the guidelines and the professional training will not result in overzealous inspectors. We need daycares. Families working need daycare. Especially our lower income families need daycare. And so I hope that the decisions in closing down will be considered and made a professional objective observations. And not trying to close down, and my goal is not to close down a facility that's very well, certainly needed to help our low-income families with daycare. Okay. So please, I hope that the rulemaking will consider that and train people and not make the goal to close down the facility. Thank you.
Chair Smith-Warner, Chairman Rowe, Representative Wisnett, thank you very much for those comments. I think we certainly agree the importance of these services for children and families of our state. Child care and quality early learning, we know, helps families go to work. It also helps children be prepared for kindergarten. And we strive to have a system that can really fulfill both of those purposes. We know that we need to do a lot more to be able to build a quality supply and support the providers that we have working in our system right now. And so this piece on and the area of regulations and setting a high bar for health and safety and regulating to that high bar and those high expectations is just one facet of, we know, the work work that we need to do. The supports that we provide providers through professional development and quality improvement, some of the investments we make as a state that I mentioned earlier in helping low-income families be able to afford higher quality care, those are really the kinds of investments that, along with smart and focused and intentional regulation, will really make sure that we have a system that can deliver for children and families in our state. And so we are really here only talking about kind of one aspect of we know of what we need to do to be able to ensure quality child care for more families in our state. And so that is the work we know that we're doing ahead, particularly focusing as we, after this session, looking at our ways in which we're working to strengthen child care in our state. And I think that the support for providers, as we know from NUVRA's research and what we do there, will really make the difference on safety and quality. And so we need to certainly step up our efforts.
Thank you. Okay. Further questions? Mr. Co-Chair?
Well, I'm just taken by Representative Wisnett's comments. He's right on. If there are deficiencies, we need to correct the deficiencies, not close down child care centers unless there's something really egregious, because we need more child care, not less. And so the primary goal ought to be to identify deficiencies and assist in correcting those deficiencies. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair. I said to you all, it's a fine balance that you strike that we, you know, you, there are complaints when you close down, and there are even more complaints if you didn't and something terrible happens. Right. And it is a very difficult balance that you have to make. Right. And everything we can do to help you do that more successfully, I think, is really important. Right.
Thank you, Chair Smith-Warner, Chairman Rowe. If I may add, I think another important thing to note, well, a couple things. One is that the cases where we're investigating allegations of serious abuse and neglect are definitely more complicated cases that need to be investigated, and they don't represent, I think, the vast majority of the experiences of children and families or providers or sort of in our system. And as we look to some of the other changes that Don talked about with caseload reductions and more licensing staff, I think it's important to note that these aren't just, you know, inspectors or regulators that are coming into a home or into a facility and looking to find something wrong. I mean, so many of our providers are isolated and in their homes and don't really have the kinds of touch points and contacts with people that can give them feedback about the kind of care and the environments that they're providing. And so as we have lower caseloads, yes, we'll be able to implement a lot of these practices that we've recommended that we think are critical for addressing safety and responding to complaints in a timely manner and looking at issues. But a lot of what those licensing specialists will do is provide that kind of on-site technical assistance and feedback. And that is so rare, even when we do professional development for our providers. Not a lot of that is in the home, where the person is in there, being able to know those children, see that environment, and kind of give that really pointed and targeted feedback. And so caseload reductions do help with supports to providers as well. These licensing specialists are often their only sort of regular touch point. So,
Senator Rowland?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we recognize the work that Representative Lively and that group did to come up with some of these recommendations. I, for one, appreciate the work that was done to bring it to us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all very much. And colleagues, this is all we have on our agenda for today. This, as was mentioned, has been a budget request for this session, so we wanted the subcommittee to hear it and for it to have this airing as the big chairs figure out the overall budget for the situation. So anything else you guys wanted to add? Or okay.
Yeah, Madam Co-Chair,
yes.
can we ask Doug to kind of review where we'll be at on Thursday?
Doug? Madam Chair and members, one other thing before I do that is You asked some questions a week ago. Those are posted on last Tuesday's meeting, and the same thing will happen with the questions that Representative Wisniewski and Smith Warner had. They'll be posted on today's under meeting once the department gets back to us. On Thursday, there is a budget report requirement to have them come, have Chief Ed Office come back and talk about Senate Bill 182. Actually, it was in the legislation, excuse me. And then there's also an update on the outdoor school. But the 182 conversation's important because as you move to next session, this is all about educator advancement or professional development, mm-hmm. on what that structure, and it's a brand new structure, should be, and what changes there might should be in it.
We're not going to talk about additional funding during this session, 2018, about the STEM, increasing that. That's what.
I have not heard that anywhere.
Okay. With that, thank you all for joining, and we are adjourned.